for the love of goats. We are talking about everything goat. Whether you're a goat owner, a breeder, or just a fan of these wonderful creatures, we've got you covered. And now, here's Deborah Neiman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. This is going to be so interesting today because we are talking about a subject that very few people think about, and one that I actually thought was really pretty simple and straightforward until one of my Goats 365 members contacted me about 6 weeks ago to tell me that she suddenly started seeing abscesses in her goats a few months ago, and then she got a whole herd test for CL, which is short for Cassius lymphadenitis, and a bunch of them came back positive. And when I started trying to help her work through all of her options and stuff, I discovered that this is not nearly as straightforward as the textbooks make it sound. So we are joined today by Dr. Michael Posato, who is an assistant clinical professor at Mississippi State University's College of Veterinary Medicine. He's a board-certified practitioner with the American Board of Veterinary Practitioners and specializes in food animal practice. And you might recognize his name because he's been with us before. So welcome back to the show, Dr. Posato.
Thanks, Deborah. I'm always glad to be here and excited to talk with you and your listeners.
This is really interesting because when this person contacted me and said, I don't know what to do, I said, oh, well, you know, most people cull the positive animals and then they vaccinate the rest of the animals. And she said, well, my vets told me there's no vaccine. And that just confused me. I'm like, but that's what the textbooks say. So I was very confused by that. And that's when I sent you an email and said, I don't understand. And then you started explaining it to me. So first of all, like, just start at the very beginning, because I know a lot of people have no idea what CL is, or that it even needs to be on the radar screen. So can you talk about what it is?
Absolutely. So CL, or Cassius lymphadenitis, basically it's a bacterial infection that comes from a contagious bacteria. So it has to be brought onto a farm. The tricky thing, the kind of thing that gets confusing, is that it's a very hardy bacteria. So it will last on farm for a very long time, but it is brought onto the farm by an infected animal. So you can't buy a property that's never had goats and then find that your goat develops a CL lesion, a Cassius lymphadenitis lesion. So this bacteria, which is known as Crinibacterium pseudotuberculosis, it is a bacteria that will invade the body of the sheep or goat via wounds or breaks in the skin. And one of the most common ways that it gets into the goat's system is via the mouth. So what will happen is that they, as we know, goats are browsers. They eat a lot of brush. They eat a lot of coarse material. We call it roughage for a reason. So when they're eating this roughage, it causes microabrasions, small cuts in the mouth. And when they consume this bacteria, when the bacteria comes in contact with them, it will enter in through the mouth, or if they have a small scratch or something on their skin, enter the bloodstream and then travel to the lymphatics. One of the trickiest things about it is that, like I said, it's a very hardy bacteria. So once it enters into the environment, it can last for 8 months to a year to even maybe beyond that, especially in organic debris, which most barns and housing for our goats is made up of, wood, dirt, hay, straw, all that stuff. And the way it kind of gets into the environment is through pus. So this pathogen has two words, obviously, that we use to describe it: Cassius and lymphadenitis. The term Cassius or Cassius, it doesn't matter how you pronounce it, it means cheesy. So that cheesy description is very accurate, because the pus that comes out of a lesion that is associated with Cassius lymphadenitis is very thick, almost cottage cheese-like. It often is a yellow to green color, and unique to this specific pathogen, it has no odor. So there's no stinky, foul-smelling, watery pus that comes out of his abscess. And then the lymphadenitis part is associated with where the lesions occur, and that's going to be the lymph nodes. So the most common locations for goats will be lymph nodes around the face and the head. So we're looking at submandibular lymph nodes. We're looking at parietal lymph nodes kind of on the side of the face. We're looking at prescapular lymph nodes on the shoulder blades. And those are very, very common sites, but they can occur in any lymph node, any location, anywhere in the body. And the other unfortunate thing that this bacterium can cause is the internal form of Cassius lymphadenitis, more common in sheep, but also seen in goats, where it can affect any and all tissue that has lymphoid tissue inside of it, which is basically every part of the body, from the kidneys to the mammary glands to the lungs. There can be invasion of this bacteria in any of those tissues. So it can hide out basically within the body, and we'd never even know the animal is affected by Caecis lymphadenitis. So a lot of people won't say, like you already mentioned, Deborah, that it's very straightforward. It's an easy disease to diagnose. Oh, you see an abscess. You know, oh, we definitely know we have Caecis. That's not always true. And we do say, one of the caveats of small ruminant practice, if it's an abscess, it is Caecis until proven otherwise. So it's something that we as veterinarians, and I think most goat producers that have heard about this disease, are very, very leery about and kind of diligent about watching for it.
Yeah, I'm super paranoid about it. You know, if I have, a couple of years ago, I saw an abscess on my goats, and it was on her neck of all places. And I just completely freaked out. It was in 2020. I'm like, this is impossible. Nobody has been on this farm in months. How could this happen? I was like on the phone. I had a vet out here like within hours. I'm like, you know, she took a culture, she sent it in, and it came back and said, it's just normal skin bacteria.
Yeah.
She must have just stabbed herself right there in her neck. And I'm like, ugh.
But it's panic inducing, you know, and I've had many clients that it is very panic inducing. The only way to definitively diagnose it is what you just described, getting a culture. So doing an aerobic culture, this is a gram-positive facultative anaerobe, which basically means that it can survive in anaerobic environments, so no oxygen, but it is able to be aerobic, which is great for us. It's easier to culture that pathogen because you can actually take a swab or a sample from an open abscess that's been exposed to air, and you can get that submitted to the lab and get test results back, that culture results back that gets you a positive or a negative diagnosis. And I've had clients that will bring their animals to our facility, put them in quarantine, test them, see if they are positive, do a culture. Because as you know, to collect that, you might have to open up that abscess. And if you open the abscess, the pus enters the environment. So I've had clients that have been so nervous about it that they actually have them brought to the facility, to our facilities, and they have us collect the sample. Or I had one client who housed the goat in her home while we waited for test results to come back so that it wasn't in her goat's environment. And unfortunately, that one did come back positive. So we ended up having Caecis lymphadenitis in that case, and she kept the goat, it was pregnant. So she kept the goat in her house until it was time for it to give birth and she could then cull that goat. And my client's like, oh man, maybe I'm being too paranoid. I don't think you can be. I think it's something that will be in your herd forever if it gets into your herd. It's very, very, very hard to get rid of. So I'm totally about that paranoia and diligence when it comes to watching for that bacteria, watching for that presentation.
So you just mentioned somebody had a pregnant goat who had it. That actually happened to this other person too. And that was one of her really challenging decisions to make was, do I cull the pregnant goats now or do I wait until they kid? You know, because there was the question of like, can they be born with it? Mm-hmm. You know, and all that kind of stuff. So can you just talk a little bit about like, if somebody does have a pregnant goat, test positive for it, what does that look like in terms of trying to make that decision about when to call?
Yeah, absolutely. So when it comes to the pregnant goat that has Caecis lymphadenitis, there's not been any documented proof that is kind of like uniformly accepted that they're going to pass the bacteria through their bloodstream to the fetus. And the reason for that is that the bacteria, it does travel through the bloodstream to get to the lymphatics, but once it's in the lymphatics, it basically stays in the lymphatics. That's the, I guess, pro and con. It may not, you know, be transmitted via blood sharing, so sharing needles and sharing instruments and things like that, or passing it to their fetus. But when it's in that lymphatic structure, it doesn't go away. It just travels to different lymph nodes, travels to different parts of the body. So it's not necessarily a bacteria that's going to respond really well to systemic antibiotics or to something where you can kind of easily get rid of it. So with those pregnant animals, it's not, you know, okay, well, she's pregnant, she's definitely going to pass it to her offspring. Where it gets challenging is that once that baby is born, if mom has an active draining lesion, or there's risk of that baby being exposed to the bacteria from the environment from previously draining lesions, there's a lot of open spots for it to enter into a baby. So one of those spots is the mouth, because they're cutting teeth. So they have an obviously open area for that to enter into their mouth. The other location is, of course, their umbilical cord. So they have essentially a hole in their abdomen at the time that they're born that will potentially allow for bacteria other than just cyanobacterium that causes caseus, but other bacteria can get in there as well. So you kind of have to be very diligent about, again, kind of monitoring those babies. I do recommend if someone says to me, I do not 100% do not want my goat babies to get caseus lymphadenitis, I recommend pulling them from that mom and bottle feeding. That's the only way that I can guarantee they're not going to have exposure in the environment the mother is living in, especially if she has an active draining lesion. The other thing that could happen, rare, but it could happen, if there are masses or abscesses within the mammary gland that are rupturing into the teat cistern or teat canal, and there's pus actually being shed in the milk, there's a chance that the babies could consume pus via that direction. Again, rare. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're more at risk just being with mom and staying with mom and nursing on mom to being exposed to her shedding bacteria from her outside masses. So what I generally recommend to people is if you really, really, really do want to keep the babies, but you know, you're concerned about them getting exposed as soon as they're born. And I mean, like, you probably have to monitor them very closely because you don't really want them jumping up and just being with mom for 3 days when you come back out to the barn. Try to pull them, make sure that they get adequate colostrum replacer, and then make sure that you're bottle feeding them away from the mother. And then the mother can be culled from that. It seems cruel and harsh, and it's really sad. And the client that I had who had the positive pregnant female actually elected for a terminal C-section. So we waited until the baby was as close as we could. She guesstimated kind of when the baby was going to be due. And then we did a terminal C-section because she was going to euthanize the mother anyway because of the caseus lymphadenitis. She didn't want to sell it, obviously, to someone else. She didn't want to keep it in her herd. And she felt like the best thing for her would be euthanasia. And the mother wasn't the healthiest candidate anyway. So it wasn't necessarily like this beautiful goat. But we ended up doing that. And unfortunately, the baby was a little premature, and you can't be a little premature with goats. They really, to do a C-section appropriately, have to be within like 3 days of giving birth because 70% of fetal development happens in the last 6 weeks. So if you do it too early, you cut that 70% and you could be in trouble. But also, I have had experience where I feel like caseus lymphadenitis does compromise pregnancies. It's an active bacterial infection. There's bacteria in the animal's body. They're being challenged daily by the bacteria. And so I've seen kids that were born kind of unthrifty from these mothers. I've seen this kid particularly that we ended up doing the C-section on had an edematous umbilical cord. And we couldn't figure out why, but we were suspicious that he was fighting off not necessarily the caseus, but his mother's compromised to begin with. So she could be fighting off other bacterial infections. So, you know, in my thought process with it, if you have a compromised mother, you could be dealing with compromised babies, and it doesn't have to just be caseus. It could be other bacterial or viral infections that she's susceptible to because she has a decreased immune function to begin with because she's fighting this bacteria. So when it comes to what do I do with a pregnant female, you want those babies, pull them as soon as they're born, as soon as you possibly can. Don't let them kind of interact with mother. They will be bottle fed babies. Get rid of mom. Try not to put them back in the same environment. And then I would say when they're probably about 6 months, maybe 6 to 9 months, go ahead and test them for it using a blood test, which we can discuss more about in a minute. And I know next week's podcast is going to be great for talking about diagnostic testing for caseus lymphadenitis.
Yeah. And in this person's case that I was talking to, she said that some of her goats did have abscesses on their udders. Mm-hmm. So that would be really a big, like, oh my gosh. Yeah. Like, I mean, when kids are first born, they're like sucking on everything before they actually find the teat. Exactly. So the chances of those kids getting infected would actually be really high.
Absolutely.
And so the main mode of transmission is the pus from the abscesses. Now, I know when I first got into this, I don't know how I got educated about biosecurity so early in my goat owning days, because there was a lot of other really important information that I didn't get. Yeah. I think maybe it was because my mentor, the person I bought my first three goats from, was very, very serious about biosecurity. And people would talk about, you know, like, the shoes you wear out to your barn should only be worn out to your barn, because if you wear those shoes to the feed store, somebody could have something on the bottom of their shoes like CL or yonis or something that you're going to bring back to your farm. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's an overreaction, or do you think that's a good idea to wear different shoes?
So, you know, for me, I love that you were educated about biosecurity so early. I think it's such a hugely important aspect of animal agriculture to practice appropriate biosecurity. I think that having a specific pair of shoes that you wear into the barn that is really just your barn shoes is an excellent idea. I see a lot of people, I work with a lot of students. I work with a lot of undergraduate students that are out on animal science farms, and you know, we have a lot of facilities here, and they'll wear the same boots that are their barn boots, but they also wear them home. And if they have agricultural animals, they have livestock, I never recommend that. You know, I have a school boot and have a home boot. I think, you know, again, the risk of kind of picking up an accidental CL at the feed store might be rare, but it's not impossible. So I do agree. If you could have a pair of barn boots or shoes, tennis shoes, whatever you want to wear in your barn that you only really wear in your barn or, you know, around your property, and then have your outside shoes, I think that's an excellent idea. This bacteria is so hardy. And especially if you are dealing with an outbreak of this, you should have a pair of shoes or boots that you can scrub and clean. You should wear gloves if you're dealing with this. If you're going to lance an abscess, or if you have an open abscess that's draining, you're going to want to do that in an area, take it away from your other goats. Because the more you can try to prevent this bacteria from getting into your environment, the better you're going to be. Remember that things like bleach are inactivated by organic debris. So you're going to want to clean anything you have with soap and water first, and then you can sterilize with bleach. And if you have a cement surface to kind of drain any abscesses or flush or clean any abscesses, that's even better because it's much easier to disinfect versus a barn floor or a wood floor or something like that. So when it comes to cases of lymphadenitis, there's no such thing as overthinking the biosecurity component. It's very important.
And then I also wanted to kind of take a step back to where you were talking about like a pregnant goat not being the healthiest animal in the world, because one of the things that I know I've read repeatedly is that an animal can be a carrier of CL and not get an abscess until they get stressed. And of course, pregnancy is stress. Giving birth is stress.
Yep.
So you may actually see an abscess for the very first time when a goat is pregnant, or like a day or two after they give birth. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And where we see a challenge with caseous lymphadenitis is that this is a kind of slow, insidious bacteria. So it takes a while for it to present clinically. It can take 6 months or more for this animal, after they've been exposed to the bacteria, for it to even cause clinical signs. And of course, we know stressful events, anything stressful is going to decrease your immune system. It's going to make your immune system a little bit less likely to be able to fend off some of the things and keep things in check. And so it's not surprising if you see after parturition increased incidence of disease, and especially you may see these abscesses start to pop up a little bit. So when it comes to, you know, caseous lymphadenitis, it's really challenging to go out and, let's say you purchase a new goat and you bring it to your farm and say, well, I'm going to quarantine it for 2 weeks. I'm going to quarantine it for a month. I typically recommend 30 days, but if you're going to quarantine it for a set period of time, this can take so long to present clinically that you may have them already mixed in, and 8-9 months later, that's when you notice that they're starting to develop the abscess, which makes me think of your friend. you know, that's probably what happened with her, is that everything seemed fine, everything was great. And then somebody was harboring this bacteria and it was traveling through the lymphatics. And it, perfect storm event, we ended up having it start to pop up clinically. So caseous lymphadenitis positive animals, to me, are not very valuable within a herd. And I know some people would argue with me about that, because there are, especially the meat goat industry, we see a good bit of caseous lymphadenitis in the meat goat industry, to the point where it's kind of been accepted as just part of it. But I think we have to work hard to try and eradicate it as much as possible, because it does impact things like your meat quality. It does impact how much you're going to get for the carcass, because if they have to cut out a lot of the meat because there's abscess contamination, or condemn the carcass altogether, you're not going to make any money. So it's not just a benign, oh, it's just CL, it doesn't matter. You know, it's part of the game. It doesn't have to be, you know, and what it takes is kind of what we're discussing now. Biosecurity, proper, you know, diligence when it comes to paying attention to these lesions, knowing when to cull versus, you know, what you want to do next.
Yeah. And a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about buck health and breeding. And I was taught, it was Dr. Jamie Stewart from Virginia Tech. And she was saying that a buck can have CL and that is going to affect his fertility.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I have seen pictures. I haven't had a case myself, but of CL in the scrotum, basically, and his testicle was a giant abscess. I had a case, it was really sad. I had a farm that had endemic CL. So the buck had it, and the buck spread it essentially to all the does. So all the does had it. And I went there because they had a down goat kid. It was probably about a 5-month-old goat kid. And I thought, you know what, this looks like maybe heparin arthritis and encephalitis virus. Maybe this is the encephalitis form. We ended up having to euthanize the goat kid, and we took it back for necropsy. He had a caseous lymphadenitis lesion in his spine. So this can pop up anywhere. And it's not, again, it's these are losses. You know, this is loss in fertility, means loss of kid crop, loss of your kids at 5-6 months of age. That could be a lot of money down the drain. So it's not something where it's like, oh, it's fine, we just deal with it. You know, it's something where you kind of, best practice is to try and not have to deal with it. And so, you know, I'm sure that, and this might be your next question, Deborah, but a lot of people are like, well, how do I treat it? You know, like if I have it, how do I treat it? The unfortunate reality is that there are treatments, but there's no cure. So treatment wise, you can treat the individual lesion. If you've got in your draw line, you know, an abscess, you can lance it with a scalpel, you can flush it, you can get all the pus out, you can use hydrogen peroxide. There's even people who put formalin into these lesions and say, oh, that's the treatment of choice. Formalin will kill it. You know, formalin's like a derivative of formaldehyde. That might get rid of the abscess, but it doesn't get rid of the actual bacteria in the system of the animal. So it's going to pop up again somewhere else. So people might tell you, well, that's the treatment. That's how you treat it. That's how you treat the lesion, not the whole disease. So keep that in mind. And people say, well, how long do I need to wait before I put an animal that ruptured an abscess back in with my other animals? It takes about a month for the skin to heal over that, and you want skin to heal. Because even if there's just a little bit of pus draining down, that's all infected material. So they can't go back in with those animals. And quite frankly, I would recommend not putting them back in with your animals and either culling them or starting a separate herd that has CL and try to keep one herd that doesn't if you can. If they're near and dear to your heart and if they're very expensive, I understand. But that's what you have to kind of grapple with yourself about what you want to do next.
I started chuckling when you were talking about treatments because I recently posted something about CL on Facebook and somebody said, oh, it's not a big deal. You just spray WD-40 on it and that'll take care of it. And I, you know, there are some comments like, I'm not even going to argue. I'm just going to delete your comment. Like,
right? Yeah.
It's just like,
yeah.
WD-40? Really? WD-40.
You know, it reminds me of, I mean, I've had people, you know, talk about spraying diesel fuel on their animals for fly control. I had a man who told me they accidentally caught their cow on fire when they used a hot shot on her after spraying her with diesel fuel. Yeah. So, you know, these kind of old fashioned, old farmer tricks, I don't recommend them. I typically don't recommend using chemicals that might be, you know, aggravating to the animal to treat.
Yeah, exactly. I know. It's like there are people who say to give a goat Tide laundry detergent when it has bloat. And I'm just like, you know, I don't usually tell people to go to Google, but if you go to Google, you will find out that something like 15,000 children a year wind up in the emergency room because they accidentally ingested laundry detergent.
Right. So
why would you give that to your sick goat?
Right. And I think that, you know, that obviously comes from, we use something called piloxylene, which is a kind of a detergent derivative. Honestly, if I was going to use any kind of over-the-counter detergent, I would use Dawn dish soap. It's very safe for the bloat. And what it does is it breaks up bubbles, but Tide laundry detergent may not be the safest option, you know, so use the safest thing possible for your animal. You know, that's what you really should focus on.
Yeah. There's so many things, so many ingredients.
Oh yeah.
That like burn the esophagus.
Exactly.
And all this kind of stuff. Like it's just really bad.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have to think about that stuff because that has lasting effects, you know, it can have lasting effects on your animals.
Yeah.
So I agree.
So when this person asked me about what she should do with her herd, and I said, well, the textbooks just say, cull all your positive animals and then vaccinate everybody else. She said that her vets told her there was no vaccine for goats, which is when I contacted you and said, what do you mean? There's like, I don't understand. Like the textbooks say vaccine. This is what the textbooks say.
Right.
So can you explain the disconnect there?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So first thing I want to say is, you know, cull all the positives. So that is based on the blood test. Essentially, it's a blood test that's called a synergistic homolysin inhibition test. So SHI test. For my students, I always say it's a bad word, S-H-I-T, when it's put together, and they always get a kick out of that and it helps them remember. But that test is something that is, I pretty much exclusively use Washington State's Animal Disease and Diagnostic Laboratory. It's a great lab and they run that test there at the lab and I trust them, I trust their results. And so, you know, when it says call the positives, that is very true if you have like an ongoing outbreak and you're running a herd-based test. It's tough to say call the individual, like let's say only one animal you test and it comes back positive. Even their website will recommend being careful, cautious not to call individuals based on this. But when you have a herd that you're running the test on, it's a little bit more helpful because it gives you an idea of how many of those animals were technically exposed and how many of them may have circulating bacteria. What that test looks for is actually the toxin from Crinibacterium. So it's looking for the toxin produced by the bacteria, meaning that these animals may, it's not an antibody test or anything like that where, you know, oh, it's been exposed and they've developed antibodies. No, it's looking specifically for the toxin from that bacterium. So when, you know, the testing is done and you found your positives and you're going to call, yeah, the next most logical step is what's our preventative? How do we keep this from affecting the rest of the herd? And you're going to want to reach for the vaccine. Now, about maybe 5 years ago, maybe even less than that, we had access to a sheep and a goat vaccine. The sheep vaccine was from Colorado Serum, still exists. And the sheep vaccination is labeled for sheep. And so we generally do not recommend that for use in goats. And the reason for that is that the sheep vaccination tends to create a very large reaction site at the site where you give it. Also, it can lead to systemic effects on the animal. So you could find that they develop a fever or they become lethargic. You know, you get some kind of systemic vaccination reactions. It also has different withholding times than what the goat vaccine had. It's labeled to start giving the sheep vaccine at a different age than what you would give the goat vaccination. So there are some big differences. So we typically said avoid sheep vaccine for goats. Well, the goat vaccine was put out by a company called Texas Vet Lab Incorporated. It had gotten approval by the mid-2000s for use across the United States. And it was amazing because it was the goat-specific vaccine. We never had that. That was perfect. It was excellent. Well, that lab, unfortunately, was bought out by a company called Vimeda Biologicals. And so that's one of the products that got cut from the commercial aspect. And there is no longer a commercially available, approved vaccination for goats in the United States. So that's kind of where, you know, the tech and even articles and things that would have been published within the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, they're going to recommend vaccinate, vaccinate, vaccinate. But that goat vaccination is no longer on the market. So we have people reaching for the sheep vaccine, which when in, you know, a panic mode, I don't think that's the worst idea, but know the risks. The other thing about the vaccine is even the goat vaccine that we used to have, it does not actually prevent them from becoming infected. So there's nothing that's going to prevent them from becoming infected except getting rid of the infection from the farm. That's the only thing that's really going to stop your animals from becoming infected. If, you know, you use the vaccine, what it does is it decreases the incidence and severity of disease. So essentially, it's going to stretch the time frame from an initial introduction of the bacteria into the body to when you see clinical signs of disease. So it's going to take that 6 month period of incubation, and it might make it, you know, they won't see lesions for a year, but eventually you're going to see lesions and it decreases the severity. So the lesions may not be as large as what they would be when we would see a non-vaccinated animal developing an abscess in their lymph node. So the vaccine, I only recommend it for use in endemic herds where you are either unable to, or you just simply don't want to get rid of actively infected animals. And in this case, now that the Texas Vet Labs vaccination is no longer available, the only option you would have is the sheep vaccine with no proof that it's even going to do what I just explained because it's not labeled for goats and it's going to potentially cause side effects that may not be worth the benefit that you think would come from vaccinating. So it's an unfortunate reality that we don't have a commercially available vaccine now. What we do have as an option, and it's available through this company, this Biomeda Biologicals. And I don't work for any of these companies, so I'm not trying to push any of them. This is just where they're commercially out of. They give the option of what's called an autogenous vaccine. Autogenous vaccinations are created by taking the bacteria from the animals affected, so from your farm, and creating a vaccine against that bacteria that they got from your farm. It sounds great. Sounds amazing, right? But it's expensive generally. And I'm not sure what the breakdown is through this company, but you generally have to order a large volume of doses. So if you have a goat farm with 20 goats, you may have to order in hundreds to thousands of doses, and you are never going to use that many, and they're going to expire before you get a chance to use them. So for many people, that autogenous vaccine is not practical. Financially, it's not practical. You know, it really isn't something that I would choose to use in a small scale operation, but that is an option presented by this company. So instead of having that commercially available vaccine, now they give the option of an autogenous vaccination. But yeah, so it's sad and a little frustrating that we don't have the available preventative that we used to have. But then I also asked the question of, because it doesn't actually prevent these animals from getting the bacteria, what is your end goal? That's got to be the question you have to ask yourself. Is your end goal to get rid of this bacteria in your herd or flock? Well, then vaccination is not going to be your answer. Heavy culling is going to be your answer, and testing and picking out the animals that you want to keep. Now, here's the other thing. That vaccine makes the blood test unable to happen because it makes all of them positive. So if you vaccinate the whole herd, you take away the ability for you to test annually to make sure that you're not seeing new cases starting to pop up. So I caution you when it comes to choosing to use that vaccination, because it does take away a diagnostic capacity for you to do, to try and monitor the status. Everyone will come back positive. So don't vaccinate, then test, because then you're going to freak out. Everyone's going to be positive. So keep that in mind when it comes to choosing whether you want to do the vaccine or not. You are taking away your ability to diagnostically see who might be positive or not from that SHI test.
Yeah. So right now, if you have a herd and you have a lot of animals testing positive, your only real option right now is just to cull the animals that are positive.
If you want to eradicate it from the herd, that's it.
And so, because I know one of the things this person was looking at, she's like, well, some of the goats that tested positive on blood have never had an abscess, but some of the goats that have had abscesses tested negative. So should I call everybody that's, you know, that had one or the other?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. And that's the challenge. You know, unfortunately, there's no such thing as 100% in science. It's just a reality. I like to tell my students biology has no rules, just guidelines, because you know, there's these things that make sense and that always happen, and there's outliers. So there is a chance that you'll do that SHI test, and literally, and I've had it before, you do it on an animal that has a clinical abscess that you culture the bacteria from, and it comes back negative. I would call anyone with an abscess, that is confirmed, because we just talked about your goat that had the abscess in the neck that came back as a skin bacteria. Don't just cull because they have an abscess. Make sure you get a culture, get a definitive diagnosis. And I would call those animals. And then anyone positive, you have two options. One, monitor closely. Because if you read the fine print, even on the lab, the Washington Diagnostic Lab website, it'll say that these animals aren't necessarily positive in the sense that they have active lesions or they have the ability to become positive. It'll say that they've been exposed, they've had the bacteria in their system before. And then I hate the end of it because it says recovered. I don't ever think they actually recover. It's hiding in their lymphatics and waiting to come out. So I kind of disagree with the recovered statement, but I think those animals are always going to be at risk of developing lesions, and they should be the ones you watch like a hawk. And if you don't want to do that, they can leave. They're not going to benefit you in any way, especially if you don't have the patience to sit there and watch ticking time bombs.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the really important thing for everybody to understand is how important it is to, during that quarantine period, when you bring in new animals, like the first thing you should do is blood testing to make sure that they're not carrying anything. And then to do regular testing. And like you mentioned, next week, we're going to be talking with somebody from Washington State about doing the biosecurity screening. And I am just such a huge believer in that. And I'll talk more about my experience later, but like, I've had a closed herd since 2005. I've not bought a doe since 2005 and have only brought in a few bucks. And they've all come from herds that have consistently tested negative year after year after year after year for like 15, 20 years for all of the diseases, you know, and that's just so important to make sure that these things don't sneak into your herd. Because this person that I started out talking about in this episode, she has had goats for 4 years, and she bought all of them from herds that had tested negative. But there are other ways that you can come onto your farm. And the other thing was she has sheep. And I have noticed this because I have sheep too. I mean, I feel like goat people these days don't test nearly as much as they did 20 years ago when I got into this. And sheep people are like, diseases, CL, what's that? Yonis, what's that? OPP? Like,
right.
There's got to be some sheep breeders out there who are testing. I just haven't met them, you know? So yeah. When she told me that she has sheep, I said, ooh, I bet your sheep brought it onto your farm.
It's very, very possible. Cases and pathogens can cross between sheep and goat species. So it's incredibly possible that's what happened. And I agree with Deborah. I'm totally pro biosecurity testing. The most bang for your buck is going to be to do it consistently every year, because a one-off test on your animals may not be the best option, because you're not going to see patterns with that one test. So when you get a new animal, I 100% agree with doing a biosecurity screen on that animal. And then that animal should be added to your herd when your quarantine period's up, and you test your entire herd every single year. That's how you get that, you know, I'm a negative status person, not just from 1 year of doing biosecurity screen, because we can miss diseases that way. Again, no test is 100%. So the more you do it every year, the better. And I think it's, frankly, I think it's worth the money to test it, because you do have one, peace of mind, and two, the opportunity to tell and market yourself as a disease-free herd. And that's very valuable. You know, and I agree. I mean, I think I see more goat people doing biosecurity screen testing than I have of my sheep producers. And I'm not sure why, to be honest, but I think I've seen more goat people, because I think a lot of goat producers and people that have production or pet goats, that's a huge sell for them. When they purchase goats, when they look to work with another farm, they want something that is clean and proven clean and free of disease. And I think the fact that Deborah's going to have Washington State on here is an amazing thing, because there's lots of labs out there. And I think you should use a very well-respected lab to get your results, because unfortunately what could happen and what could happen with your friend is that the people she bought negative goats from may have been using a lab that didn't do the most up-to-date testing. So there could have been some false negatives in that grouping. So I love that you're going to have Washington State, because like I said, I sing their praises.
Yeah, exactly. When I first got into goats, that was the only lab that was doing the ELISA for CAE, which is how I started using them. And then I just kept using them ever since. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on today. This has been really helpful. Thank you for simplifying something that I recently discovered was not nearly as simple as I thought it was. Is there anything else that you feel like we need to cover?
No, I think we covered everything really well. You know, I mean, I think, again, this is a bit of a controversial topic, and I'm sure that some of you may be like, I don't really worry too much about that disease. It doesn't bother me one bit. And I can't encourage enough, you know, one, buyer beware. When you buy your goats from anyone, just know that there's a potential that you're going to enter in. I've had several clients that are thinking they're getting healthy animals, and they get an abscess, and they talk to the person, they're like, I told you I wanted healthy animals. And the person says, it's just CL. Well, that doesn't mean it's a healthy animal. So buyer beware. And those of you that have, you know, active CL and you don't think it's a big deal, just remember that there are going to be people who do. So, you know, do the best you can to have as healthy of a herd as possible, because it's going to benefit you and it's going to benefit people you sell goats to. And of course, if you have any questions or comments or concerns, you can always reach out to Deborah or myself and we can direct you for more information.
Thanks so much for being with us today.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
And that's it for today's show. If you haven't already done so, be sure to hit the subscribe button so that you don't miss any episodes. To see show notes, you can always visit fortheloveofgoats.com. And you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/lovegoatspodcast. See you again next time. Bye for now.